Thank you very much. This may be a little difficult for me to get through, so please bear with me. You might think that as time goes on, it gets easier to think about the events of September 11th, but in reality, it doesn't, and in some ways, it gets more difficult. As one person described it, it's as if you're standing with your back to the ocean, and the waves, without warning, come over you and engulf you. You can't see them coming, but then suddenly they're there. And that's how thoughts of David and my have come over me the last 3 weeks, suddenly, like waves, sometimes known and sometimes unexpected. And some of them have brought me to thoughts of his life and my relationship with David, my youngest brother. My earliest memories of David are as a beautiful, truly beautiful little baby, and then as a toddler with that pixie smile and first strawberry blondish hair, which eventually turned true red and then eventually ginger red. And in those years, because I was 9 years older than David, as my mom often said, he wouldn't always necessarily listen to her when she would tell him to do something. But as soon as I would come in the room and tell him to either get dressed or go to sleep, he would listen to me for some reason. At least sometimes he would listen to me. But as a kid, David's most memorable trademark was that ear-to-ear smile. And if you've seen the pictures out there, and if you've seen other pictures of him as a kid, you know, that was something that you see in almost every photograph of him, that big, wide smile. In fact, I was over visiting a good friend of his last week, somebody who knew him from elementary school. And as you probably know, David has more friends from elementary school than anybody I know. I don't know anybody from high school. He's got friends from elementary school. In fact, I don't think I even remember anybody from college that I think about. But we were sitting at the desk, and he happened to pull out a photograph from 1968, a group photograph from day camp. And there was David sitting on the end of the row with that red tousled hair and that wide pixie smile, albeit with a few of his baby teeth missing. But it was still that beautiful smile, and he said, "You know, that's exactly how I remember David. Always with that great smile, always having fun, and getting along with everybody." And I think that that's what everybody else here has said today. Those are things that started out very young, and they lasted throughout his entire life. And my thoughts in these waves also have come over in the last few weeks, again, with the camping trips that we would take as family, when Brian and I would jump on our bicycles and try to explore some new exotic campsite that we had just gotten to, and David would jump on his bike and try to keep up with us and just try to be one of the boys. And these trips were very special moments in our lives when we were kind of all thrown together in a camper and traveled rough and tumble and carefree. Or at least that's how it seemed to the boys. I don't know how it was for the parents. But, you know, we were always the three boys. You know, three is a very significant number in math. It's a significant number in music, and it was a significant number with us. There was the three of us, and I think Brian would agree that two just doesn't seem right in this situation. Then there was a period where David and I were just not in touch as often as we might be. I was either away at college, or then I was traveling, and then I'm busy with law school. But we were always an emotionally close family, and none of us were really ever far from each other's hearts. And David was never far from mine. After he finished college, I began to get reacquainted with David, and I saw clearly qualities developing which I never realized before. As Brian said, I realized he was actually smart. Maybe as smart as I was. Maybe smarter. Actually, he probably was smarter because Brian and I went to law school, and David, resisting that, decided he was going to go to business school. And at first, it was very hard for David to break into that field. And he just kept trying, and then, in typical David fashion, analyzed it and figured that he should go get his MBA and then reattack it. And that's exactly what he did. He kept his eye on the ball. He went to NYU Business School, and through dint of his independent streak, stayed on that course, graduated, got a job at Standard & Poor, and then a company called FSA, and then Keefe, Bruyette & Woods. And it was during that period of time when he was at Standard & Poor and then Keefe, Bruyette that David's relationship with mine started to take a new direction. Instead of just being that kid brother of mine, we suddenly became really, truly like colleagues. We could and we often would have detailed, in-depth discussions about stocks or of a particular financial matter, or if I needed information on a particular stock, because I do securities litigation as part of my practice, If I needed information about a stock, the first person I would call to find out about it would be David. And he would either be able to get me the information, or he could always tell me how to get the information. He was the person that I would rely on outside of the office to get that. And when he would visit us at home, if my son Michael hadn't already whisked Uncle David upstairs to the computer to learn some of his computer wizardry, I would do so. I'd take him up, and he would teach me how to get to a particular internet site or to get around to a group of sites. David, being my younger brother, was also my arm into a dimension of pop culture that I would otherwise not have known of. For example, he continually talked about this hilarious new show called Seinfeld before I had ever heard of it or even thought to watch it. And because he just kept describing his particular choice bits from the show, we eventually decided to watch it, and then it became, of course, one of our favorite shows. But he started telling us about it before it became popular. Of course, David was also the one who would bring the cartoons. I don't know if you've ever seen The Far Side. He would bring the books of The Far Side cartoons or the satire magazine called The Onion, and he would love to read his favorite articles to everybody from that. David, as the rabbi said, would also have lengthy conversations with my son Michael. They both collected baseball cards, and they would either look at his collection or Michael's collection. And one time when we were at David's co-op apartment, Michael, my son, was looking at his collection, and he was impressed by an autograph that he had gotten of Brooks Robinson. And David said to Michael, "Do you like that autograph?" He said, "Yes." And David actually just gave him the autograph right there. That's how just a small snippet of how generous David was with people. Recently, of course, David's life began to take a new direction with so many, many, many things coming together. As I said, it was initially very difficult for him to get into the financial field, but now that he was really making his mark. And a search of the internet that I've done and Brian has done after September 11th shows that his name is actually cited in articles more than mine or Brian's, and in many of the articles he's cited as an expert in a particular stock or in a particular area of finances. Now, in the past, I would have considered that a challenge and, in the spirit of competition, have tried to increase my sites on the internet, but now I'm just very proud of all he has accomplished and all he had accomplished in his professional career. And, of course, in addition to business, his personal life was coming together in ways that had never happened before. He and Christine had started to travel the world with great gusto. In the weeks immediately before September 11th, David had been to England, he had been to Scotland, and then in the week before, he and Christine, of course, were on their famous bear sighting trip to Alaska, where they came within a few yards of a grizzly bear, which I asked David, "Weren't you scared?" And he said, "Well, not really. They don't attack you if you don't attack them." Obviously, David had done the necessary analysis in David's style before the trip, so he was not going to be deterred by a bear that was a few feet away. Now, if you haven't heard about the bear story or you haven't seen it, you can look it up right on the internet where he and Christine have put the pictures on yahoo.com photos. And together with those photos, you'll see photos of giant vegetables that they took, including a 70-pound cabbage, a 6-foot-tall dill plant, and one simply entitled, "Name That 50-Pound Vegetable." That's the kind of sense of humor that they carried with them as they traveled around. And, of course, they were in the midst of planning another trip in the early spring to New Zealand, and I can only imagine what kind of photographs we would have gotten out of that trip that was coming up very shortly. In addition to business and travel, he and Christine had just completed their arduous house hunting marathon around the New York metropolitan area and had found and then contracted to buy a beautiful house in Irvington and were scheduled to close on that house September 14th of that week. Also thinking about David, as Brian said, what's happened since September 11th, a lot of you have given us snippets of David that we didn't even know. For example, Amanda from KBW telling us that David had quite a fan club at KBW, and Bill from KBW telling us that when David started doing securities equity analyst, they really didn't think that he could analyze equities the same as he did bonds, but then, in the words of Bill, he showed them very quickly that he was one heck of an analyst and got their, they all admired his ability to do that sort of analysis. Another thought that I have that goes back to David and Christine's wedding night 1.5 years ago. That wedding was the essence of David and Christine, I might add. Forget about all the high-level diplomacy and negotiations over seating charts and where families sit, or over music or dress wear. In their typical independent fashion, they just designed the entire wedding the way they wanted it and cut right down to exactly what it was supposed to be about. And it epitomized the simplicity and elegance of what it was supposed to be about: love, friendship, devotion. And it was evident that they had that and much more, that they were truly soulmates and best of friends, as has been evident from that point forward to all of us. And I remember standing there with David that night at the reception at the beautiful Hudson River Club, overlooking the yacht pier just outside. The window was at the foot of the World Financial Center, and really just a few yards from the World Trade Center where he worked. And the yachts at the pier, the lights on the yachts glimmered and bobbed like jewels, and David stood there and joked about how he was going to buy one of those yachts one day. And Michael made him promise that he'd allow him to sleep on the yacht if his mother would let him. And I just remember how beautiful that night was. It was singing and dancing. Of course, the singing was my father and his karaoke machine. But that and everything else was just so magical and beautiful that night. And then I think about how sadly ironic it was that just last week I too took a trip down to the World Trade Center, courtesy of New York City crisis team. And you take a ferry down there. And as I disembarked from this ferry at the World Trade Center site, and I looked up past the armed soldiers and the Coast Guard and the wonderful policemen and everybody else helping out, and I let out an audible gasp as I realized that where he had gotten off was the exact same dock that we were looking at 1.5 years ago. And that had looked so beautiful and so magical on that wedding night 1.5 years ago. Only now I look past emergency personnel using the dock to carry supplies back and forth. And I looked up at the now abandoned, sadly so, Hudson River Club. And I realized how much had changed in so little time. And it served as kind of a fitting metaphor for what was and what really should have been, and unfortunately what has become. And so how can I sum up my youngest brother's life as I remember it? Devoted friend, close and caring brother, sweet youngest son, rising financial star, cool uncle, adventurous traveler, soda passing Mensa member, unrelenting Mets fan, humorous, fun-loving bike-riding kid. Well, he was all of this, and he was more, but the truth is, his life can't be summed up at all, because his life, as far as I'm concerned, was only really halfway over. Those of us who are here have been cheated out of the next 40 years of David Grafman. I know that I have. And so if my emotions run from sorrow and grief to a bit of anguish and anger that my kid brother had been in the terribly wrong place at the most horrific wrong time. And grief and anguish over his decision to stay instead of running. And anguish over not having my brother for the next 40 years. But most and finally, grief and anguish because I never really got the chance to tell him one final time how much I really love him, to say goodbye. And so the best I can do is just hope he's here in this room with us now, kind of watching and listening and hearing me tell him, David, my dearest, sweetest, youngest brother, I love you very, very much, and I will miss you forever.